come alive, come alive in my body. Dream, come alive.
This is Molly Patrick, and you are listening to episode 31 of the Clean Food Dirty Girl podcast. I actually didn't know what episode it was, so I just had to take a glance and take a glance at Trello and see what episode I'm recording right now. It is episode 31. I can't believe I've done 31 of these. That's so cool. So today I want to talk to you about my three most memorable meals of my life. So I thought about this while I was in Africa, because one of the most memorable, delicious meals of my life was actually in Africa, which is weird because if you've heard me talk about my trip, whether it's on this podcast or on the blog, then you know that eating while we were in Namibia and Botswana and Zimbabwe was a little bit challenging, sticking to a plant-based and gluten-free diet. But I made it work, and it was doable. I will link to the show notes about, I'll link that blog post that I did about it in the show notes of this episode if you want to take a look. And it kind of kept like a food photo diary and kind of explained exactly how I did it. So it's weird that one of the most memorable, best meals of my life was in Africa. So I want to get into that. And when that was happening, as I was eating this meal, I was thinking back to my other, like the meals that really stick out in my mind as like the most enjoyable meals. And as I started thinking about this, I saw a theme come up. And so I thought it would be really interesting to talk about this. And before I can go into what those meals were and the specifics of that, we need to talk about taste versus flavor, because that will give us some insight as to why these meals that I'm about to tell you about were in fact three of my favorite meals of my life. Because I could tell you, but unless we understand and go over the difference between taste and flavor, then they might not make as much sense without that context. So the first thing to know is that taste is what we perceive in the mouth through our taste buds. Okay, so let's go back to grade school. I don't know how old we were when we were taught these, but I don't know about you. I don't remember jack about what I was taught in school. So let's go back. The five basic tastes are sweet, salty, sour, bitter, and umami, which is also sometimes called savory. Okay, so let's look at some plant-based examples of each of these. So we have sweet, things like beets, cooked onions, corn, sweet potatoes, fruit, carrots, stuff like that. Salty, obviously, sea salt. And then we have like miso, pickles, seaweed, sauerkraut. There's some salty things in the plant-based category. And then sour, we have citrus, vinegar. Again, sauerkraut comes up. And then bitter, things like parsley, arugula, collard greens, celery, cranberries. And then umami, so also called savory sometimes. So these are things like tomatoes, mushrooms, nutritional yeast, vegetable broth, probably also sauerkraut and miso as well. So some of those crossover. So taste is limited to the mouth, right? Which makes sense because that's actually where our taste buds are located, in our mouth. And before I go on to flavor, it's really important to remember that taste. By eating a whole food plant-based diet, right? And this is, and again, for anybody who's new and not sure what a whole food plant-based diet consists of, it consists of whole plant food ingredients. So beans and legumes, whole grains, fruits, veggies, nuts and seeds. Right? Those are the categories. So it's important to know that if you eat a whole food plant-based diet, you're not going to miss out on any of those five basic tastes. By eating a wide range of whole plant foods and by cooking with a wide range of whole plant foods and combining those whole plant foods, we don't miss out. We get all of the five basic tastes, just like anybody who is eating a diet that isn't a whole food plant-based diet. So that's important to know and just good to know, right? So we can, of course, be very satisfied when eating this way, as long as you have delicious recipes. And if you're part of this community, then you already know that because we got you covered. We got the best. All right, so that's taste. It's really limited to the mouth. The mouth. It's really limited to the mouth because that's where the taste buds are. Okay, so flavor. Let's talk about flavor. So flavor is much more complex, and flavor is sort of this multi-dimensional experience that's made up of taste, smell, emotions, and the physical sensations felt in the mouth. That would be things like spice, texture, temperature, stuff like that. So here's how I like to think about it. You can think of taste as a violin, and then think of flavor as the entire symphony, and the violin is like a component of that symphony. So really, taste is, we think that it's all about taste, but really taste is only one component of flavor, right? So there's a wide range of things going on while you're eating, apart from taste, that's going to determine how you respond to what you're eating and whether or not you like your food, which is super interesting. And really, once you know this, you can really use this to your advantage. So you can think about this. When you plate your meal, you can make it look really nice instead of simply plopping it onto your plate, right? Because this will appeal to the visual sense, right? And all of these different senses make up flavor. They have an influence on the flavor, right? Taste is one thing, but flavor is like the whole orchestra, the whole symphony. So when you are new to eating this way, or like if you are doing this with somebody who isn't used to eating plant-based and like they're kind of transitioning, this is stuff that you can kind of use to your advantage to use this full orchestra, to draw on this full symphony of flavor. So use the visual senses. When you plate the food, make it really pretty, right? When you're cooking and eating, make sure that you don't have any like incense or scented candles or those little plug-in floral air fresheners, right? Anything that's going to mess with your sense of smell, right? Just have it be about the food cooking and the aromas that you get from that food. Play around with the texture of your food, right? By having at least two or three different textures. I'm huge on textures. I think that textures are so important when we eat. So here's some examples. I like at least three different textures in any given bite. So if you're having, for example, a pureed soup, like let's just say tomato bisque or the roasted carrot bisque. I just made that from our Plant Fueled Life portal the other week. Add something like some toasted sunflower seeds or toasted pumpkin seeds to put on top for a little bit of crunch, and then maybe like a slice of avocado for a bit of a creamy taste. So we have the silky smooth soup and the creamy avocado and the crunchy kind of seeds, right? So that would be something. If you're having a salad, top it with a bunch of different things. So some beans or some nuts, some raw veggies, maybe some steamed veggies to give it again, those different textures so that it's interesting, for your mouth to feel it. This again goes beyond taste. This is about the feel in your mouth that adds to the flavor. Some other things are when you're having a meal, that's meant to be hot, heat it up. When you're having a meal that's meant to be cold, eat it cold, right? Another thing is to keep the kitchen and the dining room an argument-free zone and try to keep that area tidy, right? If this is the space where there's arguments and where there's TV blaring and where it's cluttered, that is going to affect the flavor and overall enjoyment of your food, right? Because that directly relates to your senses. So these are just a few things to keep in mind. And this just kind of is enough information to get those wheels turning and see how you can apply this to your meals, right? Knowing that taste is one thing, and this has to do with just literally your taste buds in your mouth, and flavor is that bigger orchestra that taste is part of. So what can you do in your home or with your meals that will appeal to all of your senses to really find enjoyment in eating? Okay. So with that kind of sorted and understood, it's going to make a lot more sense when you hear about my three most memorable meals of all times. And I'm not going to say the most delicious meals, although all three of them were incredibly tasty. But again, it goes back to flavor. And these were three meals that happened at specific moments and specific times in my life when all of the circumstances played a big role in my enjoyment and why these meals are so memorable. Like, I've had a lot of delicious, amazing, scrumptious, mouthgasmic meals, but I don't remember all of them, right? And it's because that I was relying, like, I'm talking solely taste, just the taste buds. But these three meals, and there are others, of course, but the meals that stand out most in my mind over the course of my life are meals that have meant something to me and are really special because of the greater context of what was going on in my life. Okay, so let's start with the first one. So this first meal, it was a really simple yet delicious loaf. It was a carrot millet loaf. Might not sound amazing, but my mom made it. It was a recipe that she made often. And don't get me wrong, it was really, really a tasty recipe and I enjoyed it. And she made like a brown gravy to put on top, but it was a bunch of onions and garlic and a lot of carrots and a lot of millet and then kind of whisked together. I don't know if she used like a flax egg type of binder and then, you know, a bunch of parsley and herbs and then she would bake it and then slice it and then serve it with a little bit of gravy on top. So perfectly delicious, right? But not so, you know, the taste wasn't like, holy shit, I need to eat this every day, right? It was a fine, delicious meal, but, and she made it many times, but there's one time that it stood out as being one of my most memorable meals. And it was, I was probably, I'm going to say 19 or 20. I don't know. One of those, they're all kind of blurry to me. I think I mentioned that before. Right? Let's just say I was 19. And my best friend and I had gone that summer to work in Alaska for a salmon packing factory. Now, that looking back, obviously that was an interesting choice for a lifelong vegetarian, and it wasn't the greatest choice. We were packing salmon and working on an assembly line. But my best friend and I really wanted to see Alaska because, I don't know, we just wanted to see it. It seemed cool. We wanted to see the sky and look at the trees and just see something super different. And of course, being 19, we didn't have just extra money to go do that. And we had friends who had worked for salmon packing companies before. So anyway, we went and we decided to do this for the summer. I actually wrote a blog post about this. I'm going to put that in the show notes in case you want to read that. It's actually a good story. So we went there, and the thing about it is that the food that we ate in a cafeteria at the company we lived there. We lived on a barge, actually. We got up super early and went to bed super late and ate in this cafeteria. And of course, I've never eaten meat in my life. I don't eat fish. And so I was really eating just very white rice, iceberg lettuce salad with ranch dressing, and maybe some potatoes. Like, there weren't very many meat-free options. So this was my meal every day. And it was provided to everybody who worked there. And I didn't have a lot of extra money to go eat other things. So I was rather sick of this after the time that we, after all the time being there. And so this meal that I remember we decided to leave early because it was just not a good experience. We needed to get out of there. So instead of taking a flight, because we didn't have very much money, and we left before the season was over, so we took a ferry from Ketchikan, Alaska, to the very tip of Washington State. And then we took a Greyhound from Washington State all the way down to southern New Mexico. It was a very long journey in a Greyhound, and the ferry part was cool, but the Greyhound part kind of sucked. So we get home. It took us many, many days to get home. Many, many days. Probably almost a week to get home. And we got back to my house, and Sierra was staying over, and we were just exhausted. We had a pretty rough summer. Our food wasn't great. And I was just so happy to be home. And I was so happy to be eating dinner in my mom's kitchen with my mom and dad there. And my best friend was there. We were like sisters. And my godfather, Rick, was there. And my mom made this carrot millet loaf. And I just remember sitting at that table and putting my fork into a piece of that loaf with some of that gravy and putting it in my mouth. And it just melted into my mouth. And one of the reasons why was, yes, it was the taste, right? The taste was great, but it was the atmosphere. It was the emotions I was feeling. It was the fact that I had been so kind of deprived from healthy food for so many months, and having that just, it was so nourishing and so healthy. And I was so happy to be not in Alaska anymore. And I was so happy to be, my parents' house growing up and my house growing up, it was really cool. We lived in this house that had many structures, and you had to kind of walk outside to get to each one. And the kitchen was a round rock building. And within this round rock kitchen, we had a round table. And it used to be like a big wagon wheel, maybe. I think it was a wagon wheel that my dad made into a table. And so it was that circular kind of thing. It was the perfect temperature out. And it was, my family was there, my friend was there, and we were done with that horrible job. And I was eating good, nourishing food, and I just couldn't wait to eat that meal and then go take a bath and go to bed. And so that sticks out. That is in my mind as one of my most memorable meals. And again, it wasn't just the food. It was just all of the other things that were going on in my life that kind of were in that moment made that really work together. It was that orchestra, that symphony that worked together to really give that meal a flavor that I'll never forget. Okay, so my second favorite meal. Now this one, the taste was amazing. It's actually one of my favorite things to eat in the whole world. But again, it had some more context to it that really built up the flavor of this meal, that really kind of seared it into my memory as such a memorable meal. So Luann and I had gone to Malaysia. So Luann is from Malaysia and her family is still there. And so we visit her family like once a year. And we have been doing that since like 2009 or something. And so it was my first time going to, not my first time going to Malaysia. This was maybe my second or third time, but it was the first time that we were staying with her mom in her mom's condo. And her mom makes this dish called nasi lemak. So nasi is rice and lemak is like a savory coconutty broth, kind of. And so she makes this dish special for me, and she kind of modifies it because she knows that I don't eat meat and I don't eat fish. And so it's made up of coconut rice. So rice made with coconut milk and then a little bit of, I think, some lemongrass, I want to say, and some pandan leaf. So pandan is a plant that doesn't grow here that often. I've seen it in Hawaii, but I've never seen it on the mainland. But it's this delicious plant that's kind of a combination of vanilla and coconut, but kind of with a green grassy note. I don't know. It's really interesting and really yummy. But she makes this coconut rice with the coconut and then the pandan. And I maybe she uses a little lime zest. I'm not sure exactly how she makes it. I've never actually asked her for the recipe. So it has rice. And then there's this bean in Malaysia called petai, and in other parts of the world too. Again, I've never seen it here, but this petai, it's also called stinky bean. And it, and I love it. Her family was shocked that I love it, 'cause I guess most white people don't love it. Most foreign people don't love it. It's like kind of a acquired taste apparently, but the first time I tasted it, I loved it. And it was kind of smelly, but it was kind of pungent in a good way. You know how like when you open up a new bottle of sauerkraut and it kind of smells a little bit funky, but it's sort of a good funky, or like blue cheese or feta, you know? So this petai is kind of this bean, and it's green. It's kind of like a lima bean, the size of a lima bean. And she stir fries it with some of her delicious chili sauce. And so she puts this, she has the coconut rice and then the petai in chili sauce. And then there's toasted peanuts on the side of that as well. And then she usually sautés some wing beans, or five-angle beans, they're called. Again, I've never really seen them here. So it's this plate of just like it's an amazing dish. We when we did the Malaysian meal plan, we did a take on this dish that was really good. But this is it. It was, you know, kind of simple. It's not like anything too crazy. It's just like rice and then the petai with her delicious homemade chili sauce, the wing beans, and then the roasted peanuts. But I gotta say, again, the different textures really work for that dish. Like this, the soft kind of nubby rice with the crunchy peanuts, and then the taste, the texture of the petai, those beans with the fresh kind of snap of the wing bean, and then the heat of the chili. Like there's so much going on, right? That's all like mouthfeel. That's not even like taste, like, 'cause the different tastes that are going on, it's like definitely kind of salty and sweet. It has that umami. So it has a lot going on in that sense too, but just the mouthfeel of it, it's amazing. It's one of my favorite things to eat. And Luann's sweet mom makes it for me every time we go visit. But the first time I had it, we got in around like 3 o'clock to her mom's place. And of course, it's a pretty long journey to get to Malaysia. And it was multiple plane rides and then a long taxi ride. And then there's a lot of traffic and it's just sort of stressful. And And we get to her condo and her mom has the table set. And I don't know, there's just this feeling that I get when I'm in Luann's mom's condo. It's just this warm, really warm feeling. It has the best energy. And it's it's not a huge condo. It's like a two-bedroom, two-bath condo. And it's like on the 11th floor of her condo building. It's nice and bright and well lit. And it's just, there's something about it. And it's always, she doesn't run the AC very often. And so it's just sort of that perfect warm temperature. And it's also kind of humid because Malaysia is really humid and mid and walk in and you don't worry, get into your, you know, shorts and a tank top. And it just feels, I don't know, it's just like a little cocoon. And I love talking with her mom and telling her mom stories and listening to her mom and catching up. And then, you know, just sitting at the table and having a meal and then taking a nap. And then we love to watch TV together and make fun of commercials and find some junk on TV. It's just a really, really, I don't know, it's just a really warm, lovely time always when I go there and I visit her. I just adore Luann's mom and I adore staying in her condo. And so the first time that I had this meal, it was just that, like we walked into her condo and it just felt like, oh, we're here. We can put down our bags. We can like take a quick shower and then just relax and then sit at the table with this delicious meal that she's prepared for us. And it was like the perfect temperature of food. Like the rice wasn't too hot and it wasn't too room temperature. The pad thai was just right. We could eat it right away. It was fresh. Like everything just worked. And I just melted into it. And again, it wasn't just the taste, right? It was it was the whole orchestra at play. Okay. So my third one was in Africa. And this meal, so my meals had been pretty boring and monotonous because the lodges that we were staying knew I was plant-based and knew I was gluten-free, but not all of the lodges understood what that meant. And so sometimes that meant just very, very, very basic food, or sometimes it actually wasn't plant-based or gluten-free. And I had to, you know, have Luann eat what she could. And then I had to eat some, or I chose, right? I could have had it, could have eaten it. And I chose to eat maybe some carrots and some canned beans or whatever, but it was, you know, it wasn't that exciting. And it was just calories at that point. But we got to this one lodge called Anguma in Namibia. And we got there at lunch and it had been a really long drive and a very dusty drive and a very sandy drive. Most of Namibia, most of the roads that we were on were not paved. And so it took a very long time to get through them. And we had to use four-wheel drive a lot. So it was just not like one of those leisurely drives. It was kind of, you know, you have to pay attention and Luann doesn't know how to drive a four-wheel. So I drove a lot during those times where the road was really like sandy and at times actually not even a road really. And so it was a long driving day and it was pretty hot and I was so hungry. I hadn't eaten much and I was really, really hungry. And I was so happy to be at this place and we were going to be there for 3 days, which meant we didn't have to get up and go the next morning. And it was such a beautiful place. It was this lodge that had only like seven tented, covered tents. And there was a watering hole kind of out in the field that was in front of it that you could watch oryx and springbok and wildebeest drink from. And the people were so friendly and welcoming. And it was just this really cool kind of rugged place and so happy to be there. So we sat down for lunch and they knew. They're like, okay, you're plant-based, you're gluten-free. Like they were on it. And they said, our chef has prepared you lunch. Just sit down and we'll bring it to you. And out came this plate or this bowl of pasta. And it was rice pasta and it had this red sauce on top and some fresh basil and a little bit of basil pesto on the side. So very simple dish. But as soon as I tasted it, I just melted. The pasta was cooked perfectly. It was the perfect temperature. I could tell that the sauce was homemade. The little pop of basil pesto on top was brilliant. The kind of thinly sliced fresh basil and topping the whole thing was incredible. Now, again, not the most, like, I'm not going to say that was a mind-blowing meal because it tasted like nothing I've ever tasted. Like, it was basically a bowl of pasta with red sauce and some basil, right? And nothing crazy, but it was so memorable because of the context, because we were so tired and happy to be at this lodge, because our surroundings were beautiful. The dining room where we sat was kind of covered, but it was outside. So we could see all of the plants. I was eating this, watching wildebeest and springbok drink from this watering hole right in front of me. We could hear these amazing birds. It was so quiet, and the sky was like jet blue with big puffy white clouds. And again, it was like the perfect temperature. Once we got in, sat down, the people were so friendly and so happy to have us there. And I was so hungry, and I was so relieved to be there, and I was so thankful and full of gratitude for this plate of delicious plant-based gluten-free pasta. And as I was eating it, I'm like, this is one of my top three meals of my life. Like, as I was sitting there, I'm like, this, I'm never going to forget this meal. And that's when I started thinking, okay, so what are, maybe Luann asked me, or maybe I started, I don't remember, but I started thinking about the other meals that compare and that add up to that. And so I thought, for sure, Luann's mom's pad thai dish, and for sure, the carrot grain loaf after Alaska. And what I realized was that it wasn't just the taste. What I realized is that it was experiencing the flavor and how important all of those components are to the enjoyability. Is that a word? Enjoyability? Of those meals. And it all, like, if I look back and I see a similar thread through those meals, and it's a feeling of whatever happened right before that meal was a challenge. It was a challenge getting there. It wasn't easy getting to that table to eat that meal. So the first time I was in Alaska, right? And it was a very, very long journey. And I was like tired as hell and a lot of time in the Greyhound. And it was like harrowing to like get to the point where I'm at that table and eating that meal. The second one, going to Malaysia, you know, being on a long haul flight and not sleeping and being in many different planes and then many taxis and having the stress of the Malaysian driving and the traffic in Malaysia is crazy. Sitting in traffic and just to get to her mom's house, we were there. Like I could relax. I could sit down. And then this beautiful meal was waiting for me. And the same thing in Africa. Like, we had driven a very long drive that day, and it was bumpy and sandy, and we almost got stuck a couple times, and it was hot and dusty, and I was so hungry. And then we got there, and oh, I'm here. It was like a relief, right? So that was really interesting to just, what are, you know, that's very similar. That was a pattern with those three meals. And then just thinking about how flavor works when you're looking at the bigger context, the bigger symphony, the bigger orchestra of it all, and realizing that if it was taste alone, those three meals would not have left the imprint on my brain that they made. And so much of it was everything else going on while I was eating that meal and also leading up to that meal. So that is my musing for you today. And I encourage you to think about this the next time you're serving a meal, especially to somebody who isn't used to eating plant-based. What can you do in your kitchen, or what can you do with the plating of your food, or what could you do with the visual senses in your dining room that might add to the enjoyability of the meal you're serving? Can you put on some classical music and really listen to the person you're having dinner with? Can you turn off the TV and put down your phone and really engage and have this be a really loving environment to share a meal? Right? Because your kitchen, maybe could you clear off the clutter of your table, put a nice tablecloth down, and maybe a couple of flowers on the table, or maybe eat outside, right? Can you do something with the texture? Can you add a little bit of crunch or a little smoothness or a little crispness somewhere? Think about the temperature of the food. If you're serving soup, do you want to wait till it cools down a little bit before you serve it? Right? If you're serving something that's meant to be cold, is it cold enough? So all things to ponder, all things to consider. I really enjoyed sharing my three most memorable meals with you. And I hope that you have a beautiful day, and I hope that you have many memorable meals to come. Thanks so much for listening. If you enjoy this podcast, I would love it if you could rate and review it. That would mean a lot. And if you want to learn more about our whole food plant-based meal plans, head on over to our website, cleanfooddirtygirl.com, and check them out. You can also pick up a ton of plant-based recipes and resources and get inspired to celebrate human imperfection, because none of us are perfect. None of us, promise. And isn't that a relief? Oh my gosh. Okay, have a beautiful week, and I'll talk to you again soon. Dreamer, come alive. Come alive in my body.